It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Good afternoon and welcome back to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses here on the Red Tinted Glasses YouTube channel. And Callum, it is the, well, afternoon after the night before now. And I'm just wondering, do you feel as frustrated or maybe deflated as you were last night as the Dons drew their first home European group stage game against HJK Helsinki 1-1?
I do. I am as frustrated, mainly because I've seen their throwing back in the build-up to their goal, and it is horrendous. Very frustrating. A game I felt needed to win if we're going to stand any chance of progressing through the group. And it was underwhelming, I think, is a word I'd use to describe it. How are you feeling after it, Glenn?
I'm still frustrated, maybe a little bit deflated as well, actually. I think the whole occasion, I know we were speaking about this morning, felt a bit like an anti-climax. I know you want to pick up on the atmosphere in general in the South Stand. I think certainly the two head injuries towards the back end of the first half really seemed to kind of kill the crowd and kill any sort of momentum that we'd generated in that first half. I don't know, it was weird. It didn't feel like a European game. I thought the Haken game had a better atmosphere about it. It was... I'm just glad, though, that we actually took something from the game overall, because we've obviously seen in games gone by that we'd maybe lost that sort of game. A point was 100% the least we deserved from that game last night.
Yeah, I'd say so. I actually bumped into some Helsinki fans after the game and was speaking to them, and one of them in particular said, he felt they were lucky to get a point given the way the game went, from about the 65th minute onward, when they obviously 1-0 up. I suppose you could take some of the first half into that as well, other than maybe the opening 10 minutes and then towards the sort of injuries where they sort of had the run of things. But it felt really flat in the South Stand, if I'm honest. It was odd. It was very odd. I don't know whether it was sort of nerves, apprehension coming from the crowd, but we were trying to get things going in the South Stands, and it wasn't happening. It wasn't happening at all, and I just couldn't really understand it, if I'm honest, because in a game like that where it's tight, where we need to win, when we have momentum, get behind them and push them on, or if things are going the other way, we could try and swing it. And it wasn't happening. It was very, very, very bizarre. And a shame, really. It didn't feel like the first European group stage game at Pittodrie since 2007.
Yeah, no, it really didn't. It was a strange atmosphere. And an interesting comment here on the live, saying Aberdeen didn't go into the game to win. We were generally scared against a piss-poor team. Now, you said you spoke to a Helsinki fan. I dropped Ari, who, of course, gave us an insight into Helsinki on the last episode. I emailed him this morning to kind of get the opinion on what those in Helsinki would have thought on last night. And, you know, he felt that it was probably a fair result. He felt that Helsinki more than matched Aberdeen, but he was disappointed, like you've just said, with the last maybe 20 minutes, and that maybe accounts for some of the players that have suffered injuries in their side recently coming back. And, you know, he said that the centre-back that actually made the mistake that led to Bojan's goal, that was his first game back in a while as well. But I do kind of agree to an extent with that comment that we didn't go into the game to win. But I think you can almost say that for both teams. I think both teams, you could tell, almost needed to win the game to have any chance of qualification. But both teams were scared of losing the game, and that really kind of had an effect on it. And, you know, we made one change to the side, the one at Ibrox. Duke came into the starting 11 in replace of Dante Polvara. Which meant Leighton Clarkson kind of went back to a more sitting role, a role that's not suited him in recent weeks. And we were discussing this in a group chat this morning. I can't for the life of me work out why Barry decided to change a formula that's been working the last 3-4 weeks, even in the Frankfurt game. Obviously, Leighton didn't start over in Germany. Why change the one area of the pitch that we were kind of almost having the most problems with, but finally sorting for a game that most of us felt we needed to win?
I suppose then that's why you go with Duke and Miofsky to attacking threats, but I didn't think it worked for Leighton Clarkson. I thought he really struggled, but then when Connor Barron came on, I felt he was really one of the few playing with real impetus, trying to make things happen at a pace that would unsettle them. It felt like a game that both teams were too scared to lose, absolutely, and a draw would have been a fair result, I think. We had a few good chances that we should have taken. Likewise, they had a few balls right across the box that they couldn't get on the end of. But it was a letdown, if I'm honest. I'm trying to look at the positives, though, and think, had we gone 1-0 down, if this was last season, whatever, I don't think we'd have come back into it and even got the point. And you could probably say that similar to sort of St Mirren this season as well. And likewise in Sweden when we played Häcken, I don't think we'd have come back there either. So I guess that's a positive that they do show that fight and they are capable of getting back into things. The head doesn't go completely. Because for the last few seasons, you felt whenever Aberdeen concede first, that's it. Then we're not going to come back into the game.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess, you know, we're obviously going to come into the game a little bit more. But as Adam Heddle says, we were dominant, but Kel didn't make a save. We need to be more clinical. But unfortunately, when you're playing on this sort of stage, we spoke about it in the preview and we speak about it, you know, when we go into big games, and we'll probably mention in a few weeks ahead of that semi-final against Hibs at Hampden, in these games, you need to take your chances. You know, Barry mentioned the amount of chances we had in the home game against Häcken, mentioned the number of shots we had last night as well. Unfortunately, poor finishing cost us again last night. And look, their striker has 17 goals this season for a reason. He offered absolutely nothing last night, but he got one sight of goal and took it with great conviction. Obviously, we'll speak about the build-up and the goal itself a little bit later on, but again, it's fine margins at this level. But yeah, if you're looking for positives, I think you've got to take the mentality of the squad to come back and take something from the game. I just think, you know, a few folk have also mentioned the Pauk result last night. Obviously, they grabbed yet another late winner. They scored late in Helsinki, a 92nd minute winner, I think it was, last night against Frankfurt. That kind of maybe was a double blow to what already was a kind of frustrating night for us at Pittodrie. I think had that game finished 1-1 in Greece, I would probably be a bit more buoyant today about chances. Look, it's not over in terms of opportunities to qualify, but it's been made a lot harder by not winning a game that we had enough chances to do so.
Absolutely. And now you're probably looking at beating Pauk both home and away and then going over to Helsinki and getting a good result as well.
Yeah, well, or at least going undefeated against Pauk, which
one of them would need to be a win, though.
Yeah, exactly. It would need to be. And you're looking at that to be the game at Pittodrie. And I think that'll be the frustration. You know, we spoke about, you know, I did say 4 points would be a good target from this home doubleheader, but unfortunately, I think when I was predicting that, I wasn't predicting that Pauk would turn over Frankfurt.
No, I didn't think so either. So it does make the Pauk game even bigger, I suppose, than it already was. We already saw it as an opportunity. Now it would probably be a must win to qualify from the group, and hopefully the crowd will be up for it as well. I did think the Red Shed were very good. However, it's just unfortunate that half the stadium doesn't know the chants that they're singing, so I don't know. It was just a very, very odd game. However, the display looked good, at least from when I was outside the ground and not in. You see the top of Dick Donald, so that was nice, because for some reason the far right turnstiles at the south stand to get in, the last one, only one of them was in operation. Not sure what happened there.
Handy. On the game itself, you know, the first half, it was quite, going back to that point of being a kind of a cagey affair, and both teams really not kind of setting up to lose the game is probably the right way of describing it. I felt we were really poor in possession in the first half. A lot of that, look, there's no getting away from it. Leighton Clarkson was by far our worst player last night. I don't like singling individuals out, but it was quite glaring. I think in the middle of the park, I almost began to feel sorry for him as the first half went on, because he was almost trying too hard to rectify some of the mistakes, either, you know, playing a certain pass or trying to take an extra touch that just wasn't coming off. And that was kind of leading us to problems. I don't really think we kind of threatened too much in the first half. The only really kind of remember a couple of chances. Richard Jensen flashed a header just wide. I think Bojan similar, but both not really ever threatening the goal. The only real chance for me was the Duke header, which the keeper gets, for me in that instance, really fortunate, because he comes rushing out. And unfortunately, Duke just couldn't get any sort of height on the header. You know, even a couple of inches more and it probably finds the back of the net. So I think it's fingertips from Usten goals that sees it wide for a corner. But Helsinki, to me, in that first half, I think they had one shot from Rogic over the bar. Other than that, until we were down to 10 men in that first half, just sat in and absorbed the pressure.
There's not one. Well, hello, I'm back.
You're back, yeah.
Yes, they had one shot. I remember that sort of blazed over the bar inside the first 10 minutes. Duke's chance for the header, definitely, I think, our biggest chance. However, I do agree that, I mean, the keeper got fortunate. It was a brilliant save in the end, but he got very lucky, because he came charging out. We sort of ended up in no man's land and still pulled off an excellent save. But it was cagey, and it didn't help with the injuries towards the end at all. I just suppose we'll come on to Duke's one, I guess.
Yeah, Paul Riki said, what's the point of VAR if they don't look at the Duke challenge? I think, you know, certainly last night at the game, well, where I sit and stand in the red shed, the pillar kind of blocked any sort of view that I had to see an elbow. I just saw him go down and, you know, maybe ashamedly part of me thought that he was doing his usual and milking the incident. But one of the Helsinki players kind of stood over him, and I thought there was a little kind of maybe kick to his head or a little stamp on his ear, you know, like Stud maybe caught it, and that's why he was kind of rolling around holding his head at the time. So I thought, well, VAR definitely kind of have a look at that. So until, you know, those that weren't at the game or, you know, in different parts of the world and were sending in the replays, I was like, okay, well, VAR should definitely be taking a look at this. But I find it strange that there didn't seem to be any sort of indication that it was being looked at all. But kind of this morning, the more I see it back, I'm not convinced it's a red card. I don't know how you feel.
I tend to agree, to be honest. That's basically messages were flowing through from my heart supporting pals, and they were saying that should absolutely be a red card. So I was fuming, absolutely fizzing. But I've seen it back plenty of times. And Duke doesn't go into play the ball at all. It doesn't look like. And it looks like the players just sort of try to protect himself because Duke's coming steaming in. But he does catch him with his elbow. You've definitely seen ones like that, given, as we sort of said, about Lundstrom at Ibrox on Jamie McGrath. I think a fair point from Adam G that McCrory got sent off for less last season. Again, a fair point. But the fact it wasn't even looked at, it doesn't seem like, or you know, there wasn't any sort of big deal about it. It's very, very odd. I don't think I would have been fine if it wasn't a red card in hindsight. But at the time, it certainly would have helped. But that sort of the whole incident, everything surrounding it, I guess, kind of summed up Daniel Stefanski's night. He was shocking, absolutely abysmal.
Remember when folk wanted international referees to come to Scottish football? If that was the standard that we would be putting up with, I'll happy keep what we've got just now. I mean, thinking of some of the other examples was right at the death when Duke was bursting through, and I'm sure the Helsinki defender had his arm out and pushed Duke back, and it became a free kick to them. I think that's the kind of photo, if for those of on social media, SNS group tweeted out Duke's on his knees pleading his case, and you just zoom in on our bench, Reese Williams, Jack Milne's faces are absolute disbelief that the decision's gone our way, and even Barry Robson's face is a picture. And Barry was very careful what he said in his post-match comments last night to avoid any kind of action being taken against him for the refereeing performance. He did say that you expect a certain standard in these competitions, and he felt that the standard wasn't met. Duke as well, you know, had another couple of incidents in the second half where he, the incident where it looked like from the red shed he might have been caught by the keeper, I thought it's either a goal kick or a potential penalty. The referee gave a corner. We set up to take the corner, and then all of a sudden he changes his mind to a goal kick. Having seen that incident back, it's quite embarrassing from Duke, actually. And it was picked up on Sports Sound how kind of easily he goes to deck last night. And it's maybe, you know, playing to the European official. But he's got to do better and stay on his feet in some instances last night.
Probably, yeah. It was baffling, the fact that he sort of, we were all set up for the corner, then he decided it was their ball. Very, very odd, and one of the few odd instances. Other one I can think of is when it looked like Bojan was getting played through, but then he got scythed down, and then Duke was through. He barely got a shot off, the keeper saved it, but then it was brought back for offside. Neither of them were offside at all, and Bojan was scythed down with no punishment whatsoever. It was all just very, very bizarre, and that probably added to sort of the weird atmosphere, I suppose, because it was just, it was pretty hard to follow at times. I don't know if that was the pre-match antics, however, it was just confusing a lot of the time, and you didn't understand why they were doing the things they were. And there's just a few other things where, like, it should have been their ball and we got it, or it should have been our ball and they got it, and it's the linesman just fucking it up. it was really bizarre.
Yeah, there was kind of no like real level of consistency, I suppose. And the other incident as well, obviously in the first half, saw Richard Jensen take quite a gash to his eye. And the referee gave a foul on Duke. And again, that sparked messages last night saying that, I don't know if it was Duke actually clashed heads with Richard Jensen that caused the cut. But again, the Helsinki defender knew fine what he was doing in either pushing Duke or causing the injury to Richard Jensen. And then again, so that leads frustration. But because of who the referee gave the free kick against, apparently, VAR can't look at it because it wasn't, you know, the incident on Duke that caused the injury or whatever. There was apparently some nonsense about that. So there just seemed to be, as I said, no consistency. But that injury to Richard Jensen kind of gave Helsinki a bit of a foothold the last 10 minutes, and it almost put us on the back foot, and was one of three positions that Jamie McGrath then had to play last night. He moved to left wing back. And HJK tried their best to target that side of our defence to no avail. But yeah, it kind of really kind of killed the crowd and killed any sort of momentum we may have been building at the time. I don't know. It was just a really weird end to the first half and even stranger start to the second.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it also sort of felt weird that, you know, he went down the tunnel and you're as soon as he does that, you're expected a change. But then we just played on until he was back, and then he came out with this bonny pink dressing on his feet, which was interesting. But fair play for him for trooping on, because it looks a nasty one. Fingers crossed he's okay for Sunday and then subsequently the international break, because it wasn't great. And he didn't shirk away from heading the ball clear afterwards either. So credit to him.
Yeah, absolutely. The second half, as I said, you know, It was really strange. I kind of expected, not exactly Robson to give the team a rocket up the arse at halftime, but maybe give them a bit of a G up and say, look, we need to get the crowd going again. Because, as I said, those two head injuries with the 10-minute stoppage time at the end of the first half, there was a kind of eerie silence at times going along the terraces at Pittodrie. And we never got going in that second half. And again, it was clear that a change was needed in the middle of the park. Maybe Leighton got a bit longer than expected, and it was just unfortunate that you know, when we do make the change, and kind of a point that Kevin Blanchard makes, it was annoying that it took going 1-0 down before we actually had a proper goal, but it was annoying that the change that was quite glaringly needed made happened and they scored straight away. So there was no kind of opportunity for that change to really take effect, and immediately we're chasing the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It came at a very, very poor time. I suppose we'll then go into that throw-in, yeah, or foul throw. It's one of the least picked up upon offences, other than goalkeepers holding the ball for about 20 seconds. Foul throws. I thought he's like basically crouching when he throws it as well.
Yeah.
Right into the ground.
I'm sure. Do you remember Stefan Gartenman took a throw-in off from his sitting down, I'm sure, last night, if not almost lying down. There was an
incident.
I don't
know what the rule is anymore.
Yeah. But a lot of their throw-ins felt like foul throws last night, and none got picked up on.
No, not at all. And this one was absolutely costly. You picked up messaging me afterwards that tell me to watch the goal back, because there's two of our players in the box when the ball got cut back compared to their three. That's their desire. And poor from us. I could maybe say Ruby could have done better to stop the cross. It's probably harsh, but that's maybe the one thing that could have prevented it.
It's probably harsh given the fact that there were Shinney, Barron, and I think McKenzie would have been out there around the player that received the throw-in, how he escaped from the kind of pressure of those three in the first place would be maybe questioned by Barry Robson. But for me as well, Jamie McGrath switches off totally from the throw-in as well. Allows the striker to run in the box. Gartenman and Jensen are probably already preoccupied with the other two attackers in our box. And McGrath's just jogging, just watching the play like the rest of us in the stand. And unfortunately, as I said, the guy up front for HJK, for me, offered nothing last night, but he takes that goal really well. A really classy finish. Kel, no chance in a game that he didn't have a save to make. And unfortunately, you can't give teams players of that quality or that ability the opportunity to punish you, because they will. I noticed Kaiser said that he felt HJK were well worth their lead. He also picked up on the fact that they were a better passing team than us. I probably kind of agree, because he mentions that all we do is one or two passes and then hoof the ball up the park. That kind of annoyed me as well last night. I felt too many times we were trying to go over the top instead of, you know, passing the ball on the ground. And when we did that in the last 10 minutes, we were really causing them all sorts of problems. Any kind of long balls up the park, they were dealing with like relatively comfortably. But would you agree that they deserve the lead? Because I don't know if I do.
I'd maybe say off the back of sort of how they ended the first half.
Started the second.
Yeah, and then how they started the second as well, I guess. Probably. And when you're finishing the ball like that, when you've not really been in the game, you can't really argue. Another Bojan, interestingly, 23-year-old from Serbia. Great feat for a big lad, because he was fucking huge. And I thought they were going to maybe load the box a little bit more for him to attack it. Excellent finish. But it's a shame, really, for McGrath, because, you know, he sort of switched off a little bit. Other than that, I thought he was excellent. And when he filled in at left wing back as well, slotted in perfectly. So it's a shame. And sort of, I guess, if we were hoping to sort of grow in the second half, it kind of took the wind out of the sails a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It took the wind out of the sails, but as I said, also kind of nullified that, in a sense, that change in bringing Conor Barron on. However, it was an evident change, and a change that did kind of obviously in the end pay off. But Conor Barron really, to me, in that kind of half-hour cameo he has last night, really showed a big difference, and probably why we should be looking to kind of be starting him Certainly, you know, looking ahead maybe to Sunday's game against St. Johnstone, because he was always looking for the ball. He was dictating the play in the middle of the park, kind of guiding even the likes of Graham Shinney on where to go. And he also kind of had that energy in midfield and drive to go forward. There was always, you know, with Leighton, it's always looking to launch that ball over the top for Miovsky to run on. Whereas with Connor, yes, he can do that. But whilst Bojan's making that run, you know, Connor's looking at, the you know, Nicky Devlin and Jack McKenzie. Can I spray this ball out wide instead? Because the defenders are going one way, which is opening the space for the wing backs. Whereas I felt, kind of maybe going back to that point from Kaiser, it was a lot of when Leighton was on the pitch, let's just go over the top, let's just put the ball in the air and someone can chase it down. But we were keeping the ball on the deck a lot more with Connor. And I'm just thankful that eventually we managed to take one of our millions of chances. But again, going back to a point you mentioned earlier, we did ride our luck because, again, the guy up front could have doubled their lead. And kind of like Haken, when there was a glaring opportunity to double their lead, thankfully we managed to respond and use that to our advantage, and it didn't cost us. But yeah, it was a shame that kind of it took for 1-0 to kind of, as we've discussed, kind of kick us into life. But also the fact that we conceded so soon after Connor came on, that it meant we were chasing the game.
Yeah, we were. I kind of want to mention, I thought it was a bit odd that we only used the three substitutes throughout the game. And I thought it was weird that it was very late until we kind of deviated from the three centre-backs. I think, yeah, Devlin went off late on, which I think meant it was more of a four, I guess. I think Gartenman moved sort of to the right. Oh, no. McGrath moved to right wing-back, actually.
Well,
Why did we do that? Why did we do that when we're 1-0 down in the game we need to win? Why did we not change to a four? And okay, then have Hayes and Devlin as your wing backs, or McKenzie when he was on. I didn't understand that whatsoever. Or Jensen could play left back as well, as we saw up at Tingwall when we went down to 10 men. I thought we could have made more of it, and I thought it was very odd we only used three substitutions throughout the game.
Again, I guess that maybe goes down to the trust and or quality that we've got on the bench. I guess I see where you're coming from in terms of moving Jensen out to left back. That was a sub that a few people around me seemed a bit confused by when Johnny Hayes came on. You know, he offered more than Jack McKenzie did at that stage of the game, because obviously I think Jack was getting tired and it was helping us push HJK back. It was just so, again, this whole right wing back situation. And Jamie McGrath, you know, he did nothing wrong at right wing back, but he's a player that can create something. He's a player that can, you know, do something up the pitch in the middle of the park. But we were having to utilise him at a right wing back for the sake of bringing on Esther Sokler. Look, I'm not having a go at that need for Esther Sokler. But again, it goes back down to the stubbornness, I guess, of Barry to move away from that back three and wing backs. And again, when you're at home, you probably want to show a bit more intent, a bit more desire. Does that three at the back suit? And it was actually quite interesting listening to Willie Miller and Rory Loy on Sportsound on the drive home last night, saying that, you know, Aberdeen have probably found a formula and found a formation that suits them away from home, as we've seen recently at both Ross County and Ibrox, and to an extent, I guess, at Frankfurt as well. However, we've not quite found that at home. Yes, the Ross County game kind of took care of itself in terms of we looked convincing, but it's still not fully there. I think we showed that last night that we've got the parts, but we've just not quite got it working to its full potential.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say a lot last night it felt, well, when the ball was going out to the wing backs, be it Devlin, Hayes or McKenzie when he was on, the ball was going out there, they're providing the width, but then there's no one higher up the park. So let's say they're getting that on the halfway line, there's nothing ahead of them at all in terms of width, which is just frustrating to me. And at home, you need, I don't like the five at the back at home. I can understand using it away from home. It's worked, as you say, but when the pressure's on us, when we're meant to have, you know, more attacking impetus, we're going to control the game, at times, like we should have a little bit more probably than we did last night. It's kind of limiting. It's a little bit limiting. And of course, we've recruited to fit this system. So I guess we're a little bit hamstrung in the fact, Shaden Morris injured. Then you've got Ryan Duncan as your only real winger, I guess, because someone's not in the squad.
Yeah.
It is frustrating. But Chris Fraser mentioned something, just to go back onto the referee. The ref had a great header in the HJK box, in which I'm glad he never blew for. He got in the way of the game twice, both when we were on the ball. And it just showed his lack of awareness, his lack of positional awareness, where he should be able to see the game. He shouldn't be where the ball is going to go. I get it sometimes happens accidentally, but twice, one when it was in their box, is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, no, it was. And thankfully, he didn't get in the way when it mattered most for us. As I said, chance after chance seemed to go by, and I was getting the kind of sad feeling that it was going to be one of those nights for us. But when you've got a player of Bojan Miovski's finishing ability, and obviously it was a night where the club remembered two legends in Frank McDougall and Jim Forrest pre-match as well. Frank McDougall, of course, a player that scored heaps and was a quality striker by all accounts for those, you know, old enough to remember him. Certainly me and you, that's not us. I'm sure your dad will have told you a few tales about him. But what a finish from Bojan. I think even more so given probably the flight of the ball is affected by the defender heading it. And the best thing about that finish is the way he heads it down into the ground. Obviously kind of really affecting the keeper, but the way it's right into the post and side netting. But scoring goals like that on such a big stage was going to keep bringing the attention on to Bojan come the January transfer window.
Particularly if we're not in Europe, I suppose. It was an excellent, excellent header. Yes, fortuitous about how it came about, but there was only one man, he felt, on the park that would have been able to finish it there. It's him, I think, when we watched it back, Craigan, I think it was, described him as a predator. And I think that's the only way you can describe him, because he does have a real eye for goal, and he's classy as well. He seems like a classy forward. He's a good player. You've just got to hope that he'll see it out and get us back to this position next season. I know we should have probably won the game. However, I would like to say, doesn't it feel good that, you know, we've had a goal to celebrate on this stage and we're back competing at that level?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, nights like last night, sadly, don't come along too often for us in terms of being in the group stages, more meaning that rather than European football. And I think, you know, last night will have given a lot of people a taste of what that's like, and hopefully it's given the players a taste of wanting to do it again next season. And, you know, you've spoken about this month coming up as being a kind of big month for us in terms of accumulating some points. And obviously that starts on Sunday against St Johnstone. And hopefully that's given the players a bit of motivation going into the game that, look, we want to get that third place and get back to, you know, knowing that we can guarantee ourselves group stage football. And yeah, look, obviously the result is, it feels frustrating. It feels deflating. I've seen a few folk as well kind of saying it felt a bit like a defeat kind of coming away from Pittodrie, but look, we came from behind to get a point, which we've already spoken about, it is a credit. But could we, Callum, be sitting here, or should we be sitting here speaking about all 3 points? Because once again on the European stage, Duke has missed a one-on-one chance against the keeper. I actually think he was offside. Having watched the replay back, or the highlights, I should say, back this morning. So whether or not we'd have been denied by VAR, we'll never know, because the ball never made it into the back of the net. Kaiser says, and both of us are Duke's biggest fans, but the missed chances are costing us on the big stage. As I said, I personally thought he was maybe just offside. I don't know, you will probably get a slightly better view in Section S in terms of real time. But at the game last night, I actually thought it was a really good save from the keeper. I thought he comes out well to kind of narrow the angle. But I, again, maybe down to where I stand in the red shed, I actually thought Duke was maybe at a wider angle than where he actually ended up taking the shot. I'm watching it back. Could he have maybe gone round the keeper and finished instead of going straight at him? Again, we were speaking beforehand. Was he maybe trying to lob it? I know you've got a couple of thoughts on that opportunity.
I think he does better in situations where he doesn't have to think too much and he has to do it off instinct. This season, examples of that would be, you know, the chance they were talking about in the Hacking game and last night. And then you flip that with last season, saw him score a back heel where he had to trust his instinct and that was the only thing that was going to work for him, and the overhead kick against Ross County. Whereas last night, he had time to take a touch or two, set himself, did kind of lack the composure. However, on seeing it back, it's still a bouncing ball, so it is difficult to take. I don't think he could have taken it around the goalkeeper because it would have been easy for the ball to bounce up, it to come off his shin and to go straight out for a goal kick. And we'd have been saying, why didn't he just take the shot off, take the shot on? That being said, I still think he should have scored and should have done better. It's a tough one to take. It was a good save, ultimately, but looking at it, it's straight at him, essentially. And it's frustrating because that could have been very special.
It could have been. As I said, I would like to maybe see a couple more replays on the terms of onside, offside. But again, it's just that composure in front of goal, the clinical nature, again, going back to what HJK offered, or, well, didn't really offer in front of goal. Their striker showed that bit of composure and was clinical in front of goal compared to Duke on that occasion. But there was other chances that we had as well. Obviously, Bojan had an opportunity where he kind of scooped the ball towards goal and Oost has to tip it over the bar. Graham Shinney, you know, slashes at a shot when the ball's coming down from the air. Again, bit of composure. Could he have, you know, done better to control it? There was just, again, some of the maybe final passes or final attempts were just kind of lacking. Again, there was a couple of other opportunities where I think Jamie McGrath felt he could have maybe gone for goal, but he looked to pass to Graham Shinney and Graham Shinney wasn't expecting the pass and it went past him. It was, again, maybe just down to that nervousness and inexperience, I guess, at this stage. And one thing, of course, we've got to remember, as much as we, you know, held our own against HJK last night, and, you know, that was something that Barry picked up on, the fact that, you know, we more than matched them across the 90 minutes. A lot of their players went down with cramp towards the end of the game, so, you know, fitness wasn't a problem. But these guys have been playing group stage football for two or three seasons. Same with Frankfurt, same with Pauk. You know, we are the new guys at this level, at this competition, despite, you know, the expectation and probably want from us as fans to look at that game last night and think we should be winning it. We had enough chances to win it, absolutely. But we are still a relatively new side in terms of players, but also to the competition. So we've got to maybe factor in a bit of inexperience. And that's only something we're ever going to learn by doing this sort of thing regularly.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's sort of similar to what I said after the win against Rangers. A lot of the players, I never won in Glasgow, and that's an experience that they've taken on early in the season. And this is another experience for them that will only make them better. They'll make them more comfortable in these sort of situations at this sort of level. And as I said, sort of as a fan, given it was 2007, the last time we played group stage football in a European competition, it's just good to finally have it back at Pittodrie after such a long wait and after so many failed attempts in getting there as well.
No, absolutely. And look, again, it's a game that many of us felt that we should have won. We didn't, and I think that's why there's that kind of feeling in the stomach and that it was a huge missed opportunity. But look, the group is still there to be got at. And hey, look, we were the only Scottish team to do something in Europe this week. So there's that as well.
That's true. Best result. So we'll take that. We'll take that all the way to the bank. And we'll take that going into the game on Sunday.
We will. Taking us to the game on Sunday. What changes then do you make as bottom side St Johnson travel to Pittodrie this Sunday for a 3 o'clock kickoff? I expect Conor Barron to start the game. A lot of people last night maybe saying this is the time where Esther Sokler gets a chance.
I think possibly. I certainly think Conor Barron deserves to come in and start the game. He has looked very good this season, which is certainly encouraging. And in a game against St Johnstone, he's the type of player that could dictate play all afternoon. Esther Sokler, I would like to see him given a shot. He's been chomping at the bit. I don't know which one it is.
Chomping.
Grabbed his first goal against Ross County last night. Didn't have much to feed off of, but he was effective in terms of winning a few flick-ons. I'd like to see him given a chance. Duke, a little bit of rest because he's going about to go away with Cape Verde, I suppose, as well. A lot of travelling, probably some game time. Other than that, I suppose, then there's the question of Hayes or McKenzie at left wing back. And yes, I suppose Richard Jensen might not start after the head knock. Duke rested and Sokler in. Who comes in for Jensen? Does McKenzie slot across the left centre back and then Hayes comes in at left wing back or perhaps Duncan? Mm. Or do we see Angus McDonald or Rhys Williams for the first time in competitive action for the latter?
Yeah, I'm interested on, well, I know Chris Fraser says there Duke rested. I just wonder on both Duke and Richard Jensen, because obviously Duke didn't take one head knock. He took two, of course, in that first half. Will there be kind of any kind of concussion protocol or any kind of follow-up today on how both those players feel? Because probably a bit of adrenaline helped more so probably Richard through the game yesterday. So do we kind of see any ill effects from that? And you know, you see sometimes in the likes of rugby where players have to miss out for a week or so whilst they, you know, do concussion protocol. So with the international break in mind, I think it's fair. You know, obviously Angus McDonald got minutes at Ibrox. I'm sure he would more than be capable of filling in that slot and allow us to keep, you know, Jack McKenzie or Johnny Hayes at left wing back, because let's be honest, I don't see us changing from a back three going into the weekend as well. And I think you want to probably keep as much of that defence as stable as possible. I'd be looking at, you know, I think Connor definitely coming into the starting 11. I think you've got to continue to start Bojan, given kind of how good a form he's been in just now. And I think as much as we've had this run of games and only really kind of made two or three changes from game to game, this is, as the club tweeted out today, the final push before the international break. So, look, I know there'll be kind of tiredness in the legs, I'm sure, and they'll be feeling it a bit after the efforts of last night. But this game is set up, given some of the other fixtures in the league this weekend. You know, you've got an Edinburgh derby, you've got a terrible Rangers side travelling to inform St Mirren. You've got Ross County and Dundee, both below us, facing off against each other. Motherwell have got to travel to that plastic pitch at Livingston. There's a real opportunity here, again, if results are generous from an Aberdeen point of view, that we could go out and take advantage of them, find ourselves sitting in the top six. But, you know, because there's so many teams on similar points, we need to make sure that we almost just continue that momentum that we've been building over the last few weeks.
Absolutely. And I think going into the international break off the back of a high, off the back of three league wins in a row into the semi-final and, okay, a point against HGK where we could have taken three, but not the worst result in the world, then we'd be in a very good place. And we wouldn't have probably thought that a month ago at all. You mentioned sort of some of the fixtures there. Hearts and Hibs play each other. If that was a draw and we were to win, we would be level on points with Hearts, above Hibs, maybe even above Hearts on goal difference at that point. Yep. And you absolutely would have taken that at the start of the season at this stage, considering we've got European football to compete with as well. And St. Johnston, our doggy doo-doo. We need
that's going
to
come back to bite you.
I know. Andy Gornstein's going to score, or Stevie May, take your pick, one of the two. We're at home against St. Johnston. They are bottom of the league, aren't they? And they are. They are, yes. Oh, well, bottom of the league. They're 4 points adrift at the bottom of the league. It needs to be a win. It needs to be 3 points. And hopefully a very good performance along with it. But as I've sort of been saying recently, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care if it was 1-0 off Dukes behind.
Yeah, and I agree with Kaiser. Anything else, anything less than winning on Saturday is unthinkable for me. We can't afford to be dropping silly points again this season. More so at home. We spoke previously about, you know, the game against Rangers where we were maybe not expected to win compared to the home game against Ross County. I think this game and the Dundee game after the international break are two games that, you know, most in Scottish football, let alone us as Aberdeen fans, would be looking at expecting 6 from 6. And if we want to, you know, claw back that momentum and certainly points that we maybe feel we missed out on at the, you know, August and early September, these are two ideal games to do so. And look at the St. Johnstone side that have obviously, you know, impressively got a point against Celtic at Parkhead this season. That point looks more impressive as the weeks go on. So they know all too well about being stubborn. They fought back. Again, this was obviously at home against Dundee from 2-0 down. So I think we know that St. Johnstone are not going to come to Pittodrie and lie down or be turned over too easily. They're always a sticky team. They're a horrible team to play against. They're a horrible team to watch. I would say no offense, but to be honest, I mean it because it's the worst team. I hate going to St. Johnstone. I hate when we play St. Johnstone. The games are terrible. The games are stuffy, niggly. It'd be good to actually really beat them quite well this weekend. I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, I agree. A nice convincing victory would be excellent given how bad our games against them have been over recent years, but since they got back into the top flight, really, it's just been horrendous. The one sort of, there were a few moments of excitement I can call back to maybe of excitement would be Clarkson's free kick. Teddy Jenks handing the ball and then putting it in the back of the net, and Brian Easton rocking it into the top corner at Pittodrie. But a convincing win for the Reds would be a good for goal difference as well. And just a nice note to leave it on going into the international break.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's where we want to, you know, put us in that kind of good place going into the international break and feel like it's come at a bad time. Of course, we've got a lot of players going away on international duty as well. It seems every other minute the club's tweeting about someone departing Cormac Park after the weekend to go and represent their country, which is a good selling point for the club as well, I'm sure, looking ahead, that you can get international recognition here as well. So hopefully all the players continue to stay fit this weekend and, as you say, put in that good performance, but ultimately come away with the 3 points as well, and give us something positive to look at next week when we come back. It'll probably be a pre-recorded episode next week, given the fact that it's an international break coming up, because it's been quite a busy schedule for us trying to fit in these lives. I've had a few funny looks in the meeting room today, having the mic set up as close as usual. And if you have been not watching the live as well, please do leave us feedback on what the audio levels were like on this episode, so I can take note for future recordings if I need to move the mic a little bit closer as well. But thank you very much to all of you that have tuned in this lunchtime, Friday lunchtime. If you've been watching live with us, thanks for interacting with the show. Remember to leave a like as well, and subscribe to the channel as well, or follow on the audio platforms as well. Until next time, enjoy the game on Sunday. Sports Social Podcast Network.